Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
Once again, Chris Johnston has to do the show from a warm location, this time from Palm Beach in Florida. That is the site of this year's NHL GM meetings. I feel so bad for you.
I'm not looking for your sympathy, but you'll notice these meetings are never held in they're never held in Flin Flon or, you know, Sudbury or, you know, any number of other places. I mean, these meetings over the years, at least I've covered the league, are always somewhere here in Florida or maybe California from time to time, but usually really nice locales, and this certainly fits the bill.
I'm pretty sure GMs would revolt at the possibility of these meetings being in a cold location. I mean, I get it's going to be spring soon, but like Flin Flon, Manitoba, I'm sure there'd be like a strike of some sort.
I actually kind of want to see it one day. That doesn't have to be Flin Flon, but I'd love to take it a bit more of a road tour. But you know, it's not only just in the same places; it's usually the same hotels. I mean, the hotel I'm at here, this is at least the fourth or fifth time we've been here in the last couple of years for either Board of Governors meetings or GM's meetings. So there's definitely a pattern to these things. And obviously I don't have any say in where they're planned. We just go where they're held.
As I'm sure you're like the rest of us journalists, as long as you can get like Marriott Bonvoy points or whatever hotel points you can get, like that should be fine.
I'm actually past that stage. I used to be a point hoarder, but at this point, I just want what's most convenient, what's most comfortable, and I'm way less about that chasing that status life.
Okay, thanks for letting us all know we're broke.
No, I don't. It's not about the money. It's. I mean, first of all, I already have the Marriott Bonvoy Platinum for life. So I mean, I literally have their highest tier for life. So yeah, I just maybe I'm less loyal to one brand or one set of brands than I once was. That's all.
All right. That's cool. All right. I'm just messing around with the hotel stuff. There's a reason why you're big buddy CJ. Anyway, let's get into why you're actually in Florida. What are some of the things that are going to be discussed at these GM meetings? We're hearing 3-on-3 should be a topic coming up. The overtime, obviously. There could be a conversation coming on long-term injured reserve. Player safety could be coming up. What are some of the different things we're expecting to hear from GMs over the next few days?
Well, you know, this is the big meeting for GMs. I mean, that they do meet in November for a one-day meeting, but the fact that these meetings are held over 3 days, you know, this is where any significant rule change, whether it was the development of the coaches challenge over the last 10 years or so, you know, way back when Rule 48 about, you know, blindside hits, you know, the origin of those, you know, changes all started here at these sets of meetings. And so, you know, this is the first morning as we're recording our pod, Julian, of the meetings. You know, presently the GMs are broken into smaller groups, and essentially in those smaller groups, they discuss any range of ideas. I think some of them, you know, range on the kind of silly side or out, you know, out there side. And, you know, if conversation picks up in those smaller groups, you know, where some people think, hey, maybe this is a tweak worth discussing, it goes into a larger discussion. And so, you know, it's hard to sit here at the outset of the meetings and say, you know, what rule changes might come out of it or rule, you know, proposed changes. You know, but certainly I think that some of the issues you touched on there would be continuation of past conversations. You know, the 3-on-3 overtime, that there was a discussion in the November meeting in Toronto about, you know, is there almost like kind of having like an over and back rule or something, you know, like you might see in basketball, is there a way to tweak a little bit the rules there to have it 3-on-3 be its best? I mean, I think we've all seen, you know, when those overtime periods are like pinballs back bouncing back and forth, chances at both ends. I mean, it's among the most exciting things you can see in the game, in my opinion. I think that it's wildly entertaining. But then obviously coaches and players develop strategies to try to, you know, put some predictability on the ice. And so I think they'll discuss if there's anything that needs, you know, done there. You know, this is also a big meeting, you know, given the season we've had, I think, for player safety. You know, we've touched on it throughout the season on the pod. I mean, there's been a number of, I'll say, high profile suspensions, you know, pretty lengthy suspensions. We've seen four players appeal their suspensions this year. If you remember Rasmus Anderson, Charlie McAvoy early in the season, David Perron in December, and then more recently here, Morgan Riley for his cross-checking suspension. And, you know, so while George Parros would always address the GMs at a meeting like this, maybe the temperature is almost as hot as the sun behind me in that room, just because, you know, there's some recent examples maybe where GMs want clarification or have questions about, you know, how those decisions were reached. And remember, too, these meetings are being held not that long before the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And so I think, you know, getting an idea of where the standard is, having feedback with player safety could be topical, because, you know, any suspension that comes about in the playoffs, it takes on even more urgency and, you know, can ultimately cost a team its season, depending on the player and the circumstances and how long we're talking about. So, you know, I think that'll be an interesting discussion to monitor. And you know, the LTIR one, ultimately, if there's ever a change, that has to happen through collective bargaining with the Players Association. So it's not as though anything could be changed with how teams are managing their rosters at this meeting, but perhaps there'll be a further discussion there, just because it's topical. Again, we, you know, Vegas, I guess, is on the top of everyone's mind with the trade deadline they just had and Mark Stone's long-term injury situation. I mean, Tampa, I neglected to mention when you asked the producer Drew question, Mikhail Sergachev was on LTIR in Tampa. You know, and they've used it in the past, obviously, with Nikita Kucherov. And so perhaps there's a discussion about something GMs might like to see change there. But as I mentioned, that wouldn't happen without the Players Association having a say. So it's not as though there's any short term, you know, tweaks to that system that anyone should expect after this week.
So, yeah, as you kind of mentioned, it seems like it's just a bit of a continuation of these different topics. It doesn't seem as if there should be anything like we're not on the verge of a brand new rule to come into the league. Am I getting that right?
But we might be. I mean, that's the thing. I think it depends what tenor the conversation takes behind the scenes. And as I say, any rule change you can think of, even the development of 3-on-3 overtime started here. And so, you know, it's just hard to forecast. You know, we haven't had a chance to speak to a GM yet or Bill Daly, you know, Gary Bettman, you know, the other execs, top execs with the league. So, you know, I can't say where the meetings will end up, but I do think it is a little bit of a free form process where there's an exchange of ideas, debates, and, you know, maybe something will take hold and you'll, you know, might not be a significant change, but, you know, that's why we're down here, just in case something happens.
I love like just it's the fact that you guys get to hang out in the warm locale. You guys are hanging out at these hotels. You're just waiting for these GMs to pop up and then hopefully you get some information out of it. Can you detail what it's like covering the GM meetings for anyone who might not know?
Well, it's not as glamorous as it might look if you just see this shot of me with what's behind me. I mean, first of all, I'm out here sweating in my suit. but second to that is it's a lot of standing around a hotel. You know, it's not a hotel I'm staying at. So, you know, it's kind of used to it at this point, obviously, but it's an unusual situation where you're just hanging around hoping to, you know, bump into someone, you know, wait for the meetings to break up. And then, you know, obviously you grab the GMs or whoever you're looking to talk to for, you know, interview or conversation. It's a lot of standing around, if I'm being honest, but I promise you, I don't say that as a complaint. I'm just peeling back the curtain. I realize this beat's working for a living and I'm lucky to do what I'm doing, but it's really a lot of hanging around a hotel lobby or, you know, a conference area of a hotel. And again, it's one I'm not even staying at. So you're kind of like welcomed only to a point. And so it's sort of you feel a little weird. I'm basically a professional lurker for the next day or two here.
I mean, that's still pretty good as opposed to, you know, living in the cold. I'm really into the 3-on-3 discussion. I know we've touched on it before on the podcast. There needs to be a way to preserve the awesomeness of 3-on-3 overtime, whether it's a shot clock, whether it is similar to what the NBA has with a backcourt violation. You touched on it. The fact that the back and forths happen the way that they do, they're some of the most exciting moments in the sport. And I don't know if an actual change will come from this meeting or just will be just plain discussion about it, but it's on the GMs to figure this out, because yeah, I don't want to see teams kind of ruin 3-on-3.
Well, it's notable that this is a second straight meeting it's being discussed, right? I mean, the fact that that conversation began in November and will continue here, you know, obviously now the GMs have watched, you know, what would that be, 4 more months of their games, other teams' games. Maybe they've exchanged ideas when they bumped into each other, you know, privately in a press box, what have you. And so, you know, I do think that there's the possibility of those changes. I don't think that's coming from the league end, though. My sense is the league hockey ops department is overall happy with 3-on-3. You know, and I think they should be, to be honest. I it's not like every 3-on-3 is boring now all of a sudden. There certainly are some cases where that does happen, and you don't see as many exchanges of chances or shots. But, you know, I don't think it's broken. But certainly I think they just want to be sure that they're keeping it as entertaining as possible. I mean, ultimately, it serves two purposes, right? It's meant to be entertaining, way to end the game, but it also has to end the game. And especially in regular season hockey, you know, the idea is you don't want the players being overtaxed and playing like the kind of overtimes you potentially see in the playoffs. Remember, we had a 4-overtime game to start the Eastern Conference final last year with Florida and Carolina. You know, obviously that's just not a feasible thing to do on a Tuesday night in November for game 22 for a team. So, you know, I do think that it's possible we see some tweaks, and I'm curious to see even what gets discussed. I mean, what are they specifically looking at? You know, how would a shot clock work? I mean, I think the two things you're always balancing too is you want to keep the game in a good spot, be sure you're preserving, you know, the sport being at its best, but you also don't want to make it so complicated, convoluted, you know, that it creates, that there's other downstream problems you're not anticipating out of your one solution, right? And I think that, you know, the coach's challenge or you know, even offside reviews to some degrees, in my eyes, have done that. I mean, we're all in agreement you want the play to be as right as possible, but I think we've all seen some offside reviews that it's like, it's so close to human eye can't pick up on it. Like, should we really be overturning those type of goals? You know, I do think that there's always a little bit of hidden danger when you make a change. And so I think that, you know, the GMs aren't probably likely to do anything too drastic just because they'd be mindful of that possibility.
Okay. One more thing. And we can bring up any other stuff from Florida if you want to bring it up, but you touched on the idea of you don't want these long overtimes in a regular season game. Well, which one would you rather? Would you rather the shootout, which it seems as if people are starting to lose its luster from when it was introduced, or would you rather we just end games in ties after the 3-on-3?
Man, that's like picking between two poisons there. I mean, I've been down on the shootout for years now. Like, I really find... Sorry, just telling myself off here, Julian. I'm not even going to pretend. I can't even be subtle about it. I might as well just call it what I'm doing. But
do you have to wear the suit? It like you could just like wear like a short sleeve shirt or something.
No, I got to do TV hits, man.
Damn, man.
We're still living in an age where those got to be done with a suit on. I mean, that might change in time, but that we get a slightly relaxed dress code while we're here because we don't have to wear ties. But the suit and collared shirt is required. Back to your question. Shootouts, I've been down on personally. I just think I find that they're really an anticlimactic end to most games. It's very, to me, it's still kind of gimmicky. I know that there's a certain gimmick to playing 3-on-3, and we used to have 4-on-4 overtime rather than 5-on-5. But to me, at least it approximates the game that was played before it. You know, whereas the shootout's almost a specialty skill, and I don't really like that. But how can I sit here in the year 2024 and argue for ties? I mean, there aren't too many successful sports that include ties. Now the world's most successful sport, soccer, does. You know, in football, a tie is perfectly acceptable result. But I think you got to decide the games. You know, I'm going to bring in the third one, and this has been discussed at past GM's meetings, is why not at least look to extend the 3-on-3 overtime, even by like 2 minutes. I think a huge percentage of games are decided, like more games end in overtime right now than in a shootout. So even a 5-minute 3-on-3 is enough to decide most games. I think if you went to 7 minutes, you would get nearly all of them or a much higher percentage of them that would end. But, you know, I think that the trouble is most teams shorten their bench for 3-on-3 overtime. It's the same 6 players that see most of the minutes, and you know, those are the 6 players that already play the most minutes on the team. And I think from a player perspective, well, it might not sound much, okay, you know, whether it's Nathan MacKinnon or Connor McDavid picking up an extra minute in this game that goes to 3-on-3 overtime, the cumulative effect of that on a season, you know, is not insignificant. And so, you know, I think that my guess is, I'm not saying it will happen here this week. My guess is we will see something like a 7-minute 3-on-3 overtime introduced at some point. I just, you know, they've discussed in the past, I haven't been ready to take that step, but I do think it's a natural next step for the league is to extend the overtime just a little bit, because, you know, I think there's a recognition that shootouts have lost some of that appeal. I mean, look, it's been 20 years now since the NHL introduced it. So, you know, pace evolve and change over time.
I would be all in favor of 7 minutes overtime. I don't know how other people would feel about it. I love that idea.
Yeah. I mean, there's no downside in my opinion, really. I mean, other than what I mentioned is you just, it's an extra shift or two for the top players, but most 3-on-3 overtimes, I'm just hoping one team wins it. Like when I'm watching it, I'm usually thrilled and I'm just like, please don't end in a shootout. And the good news is we've only got 5 weeks left in regular season. There will be no shootouts after mid-April.
Looking forward to the postseason. Anything else you want to mention from Florida before we move on?
That's all for now. I mean, we'll have more of an update Thursday when the meetings will have happened and I've had more chances to have discussions while here, but you know, I think that's a good primer on where we're going. And you know, just letting you know I'm standing in the sun in a suit if you're watching us on YouTube.
Okay. Free idea for the SDPN people. I don't even know if we have this, so please correct me if I'm wrong. CJ Show polos. Like, it would be cool if, like, the next time you're in Florida or you're doing these shows, you could at least wear a polo. Is the dress code not relaxed enough where you could at least wear a polo?
I think I could probably get away with that. I don't have a good polo, if I'm honest. Like, I don't have one that would look proper under my suit. But if I invested in one...
don't wear it under the suit. Just wear the polo.
I invested in one. Oh man, I got Pierre LeBrun in the background taking a picture or video of me here. Nothing good is going on right now.
tell Pierre to come through. Tell Pierre to make a cameo appearance. No, I'm kidding. Seriously. I mean, Bell Media, I mean, as a former Bell Media employee myself, I have worn polos on TV. The dress code should be, you know, relaxed enough. But anyway, we don't have to obsess
over dress code. I'm still a third liner on this team, man. I'm not making the rules. I'm just going by whatever Darren Dreger says, or, you know, that's what the rule of God is in my world.
Yeah. You're a third liner. You're a second liner at the very least. I'd even put you first line, to be quite honest with you. You're a top six forward.
I mean, that's kind of you to say, but I still think of myself as a grinding third liner.
Well, you know, old habits die hard. Anyway, Evgeny Kuznetsov, I want to talk about him because you got to talk to him a couple days ago. Evgeny Kuznetsov with the Carolina Hurricanes, acquired at the deadline, needed a change of scenery after spending all that time in Washington. Just his statistics show not going so well for him there, but it seems as if in Carolina, he's finding a bit of a new lease on life. What do you think of what's going on with Evgeny in Carolina? And what did you think of the deal?
Well, I think what's most interesting to me is, you know, in speaking with him, he had a 39-day period where he didn't skate or barely worked out. And that only ended at the start of March. And that's, of course, because he was in the NHL and NHLPA player assistance program, seeking treatment there for issues that are undisclosed, but he called them big issues. So it was obviously, you know, difficult. He's come through a very difficult time in his life personally off the ice. But the result of that on the ice is he's not in any type of typical playing shape for this stage of the season. And not only that, he gets traded to a new team after 800 games in a cap sweater, but he's had two practices as of this recording in Carolina, and he's played 6 games in 9 days. So it's, I mean, look, it's actually started well for him personally, I would say. You know, 2 goals and 2 assists in those 6 games. Carolina's won 5 of the 6 games. I think we can see, you know, him and Jake Guentzel sharing a line with Martin Nietzsche. It's kind of gives Carolina a second line that they haven't had, like the kind of pop offensively that they haven't had in the past. So, you know, you can understand how this might work. But I would say at this early stage, who knows how this is going to go? And so I think he's a compelling player. I don't know how much you've got to speak with him over the years, Julian, but he's a really interesting guy, I would say. Like, you can tell there's a lot. Got a very dry, funny sense of humor. You know, obviously he does the bird celebration when he scores goals. People know that. You know, he says he picked that up from the FIFA video game and he likes to do it for kids. Like, he just thinks it's a neat thing for kids to see watching. Like, he's, you know, at his best, obviously, he was one of the NHL's best playmaking centers. But he's so far from his best at this point in time that at age 31, he just got traded for a third round pick and Washington ate half his salary. So it's a real risk reward kind of circumstance for Carolina. I think that they feel they can surround him with the right people to allow him to move past, you know, the personal issues he's been dealing with. And you know, let's face it, even on the ice, this season was an unmitigated disaster for him with the Capitals. But you know, it seems like he has a new lease on life. To me, it's truly an untold story, though. I mean, I'm not going to base off the six games any prediction, but I just can't imagine the circumstances he's found himself through, where obviously he needed to seek that treatment, didn't skate for more than a month in the middle of the season, joins a new team, he's playing every night, and he actually goes back to Washington on Friday. So I mean, you get the sense in talking to him, I'll say this, that it's all happened so fast. It's almost like he hasn't had time to reflect on anything or to really think. He's just going. And quite honestly, I mean, based on the early returns on that, might be the best thing for him, that he's just been able to jump head first in with a new team, find a spot there. I know certainly, you know, speaking to a couple of the other Hurricanes players and people around the team, he's been a positive, you know, addition at this point. Because again, when he's in a good mental space, which he appears to be at this point in time, I mean, he's a really funny guy. He's loves the locker room atmosphere. You know, he's got those quick-witted chirps, which have currency in an NHL dressing room, and then obviously on the ice. You know, what the Hurricanes are hoping is he still has the kind of ability that you know, we saw in his best times in Washington. So I for me, he's one of the top five players to watch for the rest of the season, because I think if he's good or great, I mean, maybe we're looking back at that decision by Carolina to take a chance on as you know, a real, you know, difference maker in what's a successful spring. Or, you know, honestly, as a person, I'm rooting for him, but there's a world where that doesn't go well, right? There's a world where, you know, he's, you know, the cumulative effect of everything he's dealing with. And again, I don't have full insight into that. You know, he hasn't discussed it, you know, exactly the nature of the off ice issues that he's had, but even, you know, on ice, you know, there's a world where he doesn't get his career back on track. I mean, he said it himself. He said he views this as his last opportunity. Kind of, he's in a last chance situation. And for all those reasons, I just think he's a compelling character. And, you know, just talking to him a lot over the years, obviously covered a lot of the Capitals days. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hoping the best for him and for his family.
That sounds really intriguing. I'm also intrigued at the fact that Carolina was able to get him and Jake Guentzel and Don Waddell. Just, I mean, it's weird to say under the radar, but Vegas obviously stole so many headlines with what they did at the trade deadline. But Don Waddell did a pretty good job in getting Jake Guentzel from the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it looks as if Evgeny Kuznetsov is working out for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, yeah. And this has the feeling of kind of, look, I'm not going to predict that Carolina's going in the opposite direction next year, but it's a bit of a last stand for that organization in some ways, right? I mean, right now, Rod Brind'Amour and his coaching staff are all on expiring contracts. You know, I've got no reason to believe that he won't stay there. He said in the past, you know, he only wants to live and work in Raleigh. But, you know, if there was a world where Rod Brind'Amour hits the open market as a coaching free agent, I don't think there's any question he'd be in hot demand in a number of markets around the league. The Hurricanes themselves now have 8 unrestricted free agents on their roster, including a number of defensemen. So, you know, that in itself implies there's going to be change. They've made this big trade for Guentzel, who's a rental player. It's not in their DNA as a team typically to take that kind of spin or that kind of role. And you know, I know that they didn't pay a massive price to get him. You know, they still gave up assets. They gave up prospects that are likely to become NHL players to Pittsburgh. And, you know, if it ends up only being 20 or 25 games with Jake Guentzel and a disappointing playoffs, then, you know, it will look like a big price to pay. And so I love the kind of all-in nature that all of these moves have the feel of, because look back at the last 6 seasons. Carolina has the 4th best regular season winning percentage over the last 6 years. They've won a playoff series every year of those years since Rod Brind'Amour is behind the bench. I'm counting what did they call it? The divisional or what? In the COVID playoffs, they won one of those best of fives against the Rangers.
Yeah.
Which isn't, I don't think technically in the record book goes down as a playoff victory, but they've beat another team head to head in the playoffs every year going back. I think they have 7 series wins and 2 Eastern Conference final appearances. I mean, they've been close. They've been knocking at the door. They're maybe a step below where the San Jose Sharks were in the previous generation. But the point is every year they're there with a swinging chance if things go their way, if they can, you know, find a way. And I feel like they're taking a harder swing this go around. So I think it's going to be a compelling playoff year in Carolina. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, you look at the races every day. I'm trying to figure out who's going to play whom. It's all over the map. I mean, the races are tight. But obviously the Hurricanes have had a nice bounce here since making those trades too. So in the short term, it's hard to argue anything other than they've had a positive effect on the team. And you know, I think it's the longer term where it matters. It's about getting those players comfortable, understanding the systems. I mean, Kuznetsov's had two practices. He said he doesn't even know the drills yet that they do in practice. So, like, you know, he's obviously he's going on feel naturally because he's a gifted hockey player. But I think that's a real systems based team. And you know, so there's still a bit of a learning curve ahead, but you know, I'm with you. I like the deadline. I like the spirit of it. And it's one of these ones. It's really look back on it. Like Don Waddell is a genius, or my goodness, they took their big swing and it didn't pay off.
But are you wearing sunscreen, by the way?
I am. Absolutely. I'm going to move to a little more, less sunny spot. Frank Gagne.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Shady Rays. Get ready for the season ahead with quality shades built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. You have probably seen me with these bad boys. I love these. These are my favorite sunglasses. The look, the gold frame. Calgary is also a really sunny place. These help out so much, even when I'm driving to work. Love wearing these. They have hundreds of other options to choose from. Maybe you don't like that style. You will definitely find one that you will love. Plus, if they go missing or if they take an unexpected hit, they have the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair is backed by a lost or broken replacement guarantee. It's awesome. Take advantage of that if you can. And if you don't like the pair that you have, you can exchange for a new pair or return worry-free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop. Their team always has your back with personal and fast support. You can go to ShadyRays.com right now and take advantage of the deal they have. Use the code Johnston and you can get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. This episode of the Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Shopify. Think of some great teammates who have got the job done together. Gronk and Brady, Pippen and Jordan, Venus and Serena when they're playing doubles together. What about the perfect teammates when it comes to growing your business? That could be you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. And they help you turn your browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Shopify also powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And they're also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Johnston, all lowercase. CJ, you mentioned those playoff races. I'm obviously in the West, so I'm looking at what's going on the Western side of things. On the East, it looks really tight. Tampa and Detroit are in playoff spots, but Washington, the Islanders are really close. I mean, I don't know if Pittsburgh has that much of a chance with how much they've been playing, but I mean, they are 5 points out of a playoff spot. What do you make of that wild card race?
What I make of it is
Buffalo too, and New Jersey as well too. I should mention those two teams as well.
Two or three weeks ago, it looked like we weren't going to have any real playoff races. It looked like maybe races where the eight teams on both sides were kind of locked in, and maybe there would be some juggling within them.
Obviously is the big one for me. They've gone on a long losing streak here. You know, I know they won a game recently, then lost the next one, but you know, that's brought more teams in the East back into the picture. The Islanders getting hot has helped. And so I don't know how to sort it all out. I mean, there's huge consequences, though, for the Red Wings.
No, obviously, they're still a young team at heart. I know that they have some veteran players. But, you know, they're learning how to, when the games get big, how to get through this. And it hasn't gone well here in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, I think it's setting up now as being quite compelling. I mean, every day I'm first thing when I wake up in the morning is I'm rechecking the standings to see who's jumped to them. And obviously it brings a little bit more focus on the games, you know, each night. And so, I mean, this is what you want. I mean, this is probably why we have the playoff format we do and the point system in the league, which, you know, I know some people like the 3-point win, which I think is a logical thing, quite honestly, but you know, this does keep the races feeling closer and more teams within a touch. And, you know, and now it's going to be who can finish hot over a couple of weeks of the season. I mean, it's a race to get in, and you don't want to play those teams. I mean, Nashville looked dead in the water a month ago or 6 weeks ago, and, you know, they reel off 12 wins in 14 games, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, do you, not only are they comfortably in a playoff spot now at this point, it's like, how scared are you of playing them if you're another team? I mean, this is, we've seen lots of teams do this. Florida last year is a great example. They were on the outside in March and finished the year on a great run and took it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, I really believe the league is pretty wide open at the top end of it. Obviously we've got some teams at the very bottom that are kind of excluded from that conversation, but in general, I wouldn't want to be picking a Stanley Cup winner right now. You know, it would be a tough thing to do. Maybe Colorado, but even that, I'm purely influenced by seeing that game they played Saturday in Edmonton. And, yeah, you know, that game was just played at another speed from what we're used to seeing in the league. And Colorado's, and just, they've got a great team with just high end performers. We've seen them win a cup recently. You know, they'd probably be my pick or as the favorite right now, but there's a lot of other great teams out there on a league, whether you're looking at Florida, Edmonton, I mean, Vegas, even though they're clinging to a playoff spot at this point in time, do you really want to face the Golden Knights? I mean, it's going to be a great tournament.
I still think with Vegas, I get that they have all those new players and they're trying to figure stuff out and they're not playing as well as they would like. They're level on points with the Los Angeles Kings right now. And I think also the same winning percentage as well. I still can't go against those guys, man. They're coached really well. They have talent up and down the lineup when everyone gets back from injury. That's not a team you want to play in the first round or the second round. Like, there's something about that Golden Knights team. I'm just, well, watch out for them.
And what's awesome about it, in a way, they might end up being the equivalent of the eighth seed. Like, they might end up being the team that faces the best team in their conference in round one. So you're making a point that is, I think, salient. You don't want to face them, but it could be a team that had a great regular season facing them. And then all of a sudden your reward for whatever 118 point season is round one Vegas. I mean, that it's why the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs is so electric. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it, but I think part of it is truly, I mean, we saw it last year. Florida was the equivalent of the eighth seed in the East. Boston had a historically great regular season. And after seven games, the Bruins season was over. So, you know, that's, everything can turn on a dime, and the consequences are getting real when we get this late in the year.
All right, let's get to Ask CJ. It's Monday, so it's time for us to get to questions sent in to Twitter or through Discord, and they're either hockey questions or not so serious questions. Let's see how many of the second category we have today. We'll start with from Jacob O'Rourke. Let's start with him. Which city that you've been to has the best food for you to fuel up for your runs?
Ooh. I mean, you can't go wrong in Chicago. That's a hard one. Nashville is a great eating city. Although I don't know if having a big barbecue dinner is maybe the best, you know, thing you put in your body right before a run, but I love going to Nashville. I love eating there. Yeah. I mean, weirdly, I like to run on an empty stomach. So that's, I have a hard time running after eating anything, even if it's been a couple hours since my meal. So the ideal scenario obviously for me is to run in the morning before I've eaten anything, but I'll go with Chicago. I love that town. So many great restaurants. I mean, look, I mean, by saying that, I'm like ignoring New York, which is just sitting right there. Like, if you can't find a good meal in New York, you're doing it wrong. But I mean, it's it's a great league for that. And especially the big cities, I think, give you the most number of options.
You mentioning that you run on an empty stomach reminded me of the fact that you don't like breakfast.
Well, I just don't eat breakfast typically.
Yeah, well, you and I both need to get on the breakfast train. Like, I used to be a big breakfast person, and somewhere along the way that got lost. We need to become the breakfast boys for our own sake.
I don't think so. I feel better when I'm not eating breakfast.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to offer health tips. I don't really know what's actually healthy for you, but I think if you have like a 12 to 16 hour fast, like I feel way better when that's what I have. So I typically try to eat dinner and then not eat till at least noon the next day. That's, you know, 16 hours basically.
Damn. Okay. All right. Hey, get on the CJ.
Again, this is not food. Let us tag this. This is not health advice. And so no doubt some of the 100%ers out there know a lot more on this topic. I could only speak to what works for me, but I find that's like the optimum schedule for me personally.
Some nutritionist is going to hit us up on Twitter or Instagram and be like, eat breakfast. Anyway, Curtis Lazar fan account. Will Mike Sullivan be the head coach for the Pittsburgh Penguins next season?
I don't have a crystal ball, Julian.
I know you don't. You've made that clear.
Look, he makes a lot of money and he has a lot of years left on his deal. And I've never heard any suggestion that there's, you know, a dissatisfaction with the job performance he's had, even with the team taking a step back this year. I think he will be the coach in Pittsburgh next year, but we'll have to see. I mean, Pittsburgh, if we're not counting the playoffs, Pittsburgh's the most interesting team in the league right now. How do they approach this offseason? You know, I don't see any easy path for them to get better next year. I'm talking just short term. Like, what's the best way for them to come back? And we were saying there can be a playoff team next year. I don't know. And where do things go with Sidney Crosby and being able to sign his extension? Is maybe it in the best interest of both Mike Sullivan and the Penguins? Like, could they trade their head coach? Maybe that's the answer. I mean, who knows? I think everything has to be on the table, though, for the Penguins, and that makes them compelling. But as of here, right now, on March, whatever day this is, 18th, I think, I'm going to say that Mike Sullivan will be their coach next season.
Okay. From Matthew, hi, CJ and Julian. How many games will Joseph Woll play before the end of the season?
Ooh, less than half, 6 games. You know, the Leafs seem inclined to be leaning a little bit more in Samsonov's direction. I think that makes sense, quite honestly, with how he's played since coming back from that mental reset he had, how much he's won. And so unless that changes or his health changes, I think Woll is already kind of relegated to being 1B entering the playoffs. I should hammer this home, though, because this is a big talking point in Toronto, like who's the playoff starter. There is no playoff starter. I mean, I think that the odds are heavily tilted to both of those guys playing playoff games this spring, either because of injury or performance or, you know, some other reason. I mean, so many teams nowadays use 2 goalies in the playoffs. Like, it's not even a rare thing anymore. We saw the Bruins do it last year off the top of my head in the first round, go back and forth between Ullmark and Swayman. You know, Vegas didn't start the playoffs with Aiden Hill as their starter. So I just think that you usually need 2 goalies to get through. I don't know how long the Leafs are going to play, but I think Woll had a really long layoff with the high ankle sprain. And so I think he probably plays 5 or 6 more games this regular season. Obviously, they got a back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday this week. So I think you'll see him in one of those games. But by and large, Samsonov is the starter and, you know, knock wood, assuming he remains healthy and the performance is at the level it's been for the last 6 weeks or so.
Okay. DMAC 74, or 74s, I should say. Who do you both think will win the scoring race? If you're looking for a refresher on points, Nathan MacKinnon leads with 116, Nikita Kucherov at 114, Connor McDavid at 106. We'll keep it between those top three for now.
I mean, I'm going MacKinnon. He's been unreal this year. Next level, good. You know, it's hard to go against McDavid, and even though he's 10 points behind at this recording, like 10 points for him, like that could be just a good week. Or an average week, because he's superhuman and he's won the scoring title numerous times. But I think it's where MacKinnon's at and the fact that he does have the lead and who he plays with. I mean, give Kucherov tip of the cap because he's really carried a lot of Tampa's offense. this season when you really look at the numbers there. But you know, I think it's McKinnon's to lose.
I think it's McKinnon's to lose too, but I think it's really funny how we've just gone quiet on Nikita Kucherov again. Like, I get it. Connor McDavid is superhuman. He is electrifying. He could easily get like how many points to just somersault over everyone else in front of him for the race. But Nikita Kucherov, he just does his thing quietly. It just this quiet superstar. And we kind of put him in the background while we marvel at Nathan McKinnon and we marvel at Connor McDavid. It would be really funny if at the end of this season, Nikita Kucherov emerged as the Art Ross winner, knowing that we focused so much on the other two players. But I will pick McKinnon, which kind of, you know, contradicts what I just said.
Right. You're like, yeah, but I'm still going to say McKinnon.
Yeah. Yeah. Nathan McKinnon is an automatic point. Is an automatic point getter at home. Like, I can't go against that. Anyway, Mike M., are the Washington Capitals going to mess around and make the playoffs? And if they do, does Spencer Carberry deserve the Jack Adams?
He might win it if that happens. I mean, he merited consideration either way. You know, was looked at as a bright young coach even before, you know, getting his first head coaching job in the NHL. And it's gone really well in Washington. And so he fits the profile, right? It's team that has a surprisingly good year. Or unexpectedly good year, which is, you know, where the Capitals are kind of at right now and where they would especially be if they find a way to emerge from that pack of teams chasing a wild card spot in the East. And so that's typically the coach that wins it. It's not usually the guy whose team wins the President's Trophy. It's kind of the nature of the award. And so I think Carberry will certainly be getting votes for that and could win it if they finish strong here and get in the postseason.
After this episode ends, check your Twitter, because Pierre posted that photo of you doing the show on Twitter.
Oh God.
I got one more question for you. For Marie.
Did not need to see that, Pierre. Like, the 100%ers were going to know what was up. They're going to see me out here. They're going to hear us talking about it. But you don't need like random guys scrolling at work seeing me sweating in the sun doing a podcast.
Damn, man. They already, man, the mentions.
What did someone he say?
Someone wrote, can we get the man a chair, please? Oh, someone's like, is Mark Bergevin hiding behind the palm trees in reference to that year he came
out? I was there that year, yeah.
Shout out to this guy. Good for him. But so the tweet says, here's the hardworking reporter, Chris, podcasting away here at the NHL GM meetings on day one. And someone says, good for him, but hardworking and podcasting don't really belong in the same sentence. Yeah, whoever you are, this dude, shut up. Wow. That's not
Producer
true
Nick
at all.
Just caught a stray bullet there. Like, he's doing hard work.
Oh, damn. Okay, one last one here. For Maureen, it's on your favorite topic, NHL expansion. How soon does CJ see this happening? Is it 2 years from now? Is it possible then? Does CJ think Utah is the front runner, especially if Arizona moves?
I mean, look, they got to sort out Arizona first. I mean, I would say that's front burner. I know the Coyotes are in an auction here to secure a piece of land where they're hoping to build an arena. If that falls through, it's just hard to see them staying where they are. And I think the easiest, quickest short-term solution, if it has to be done, and obviously the league doesn't want this, but it would be Salt Lake City. Because, you know, the Atlanta project that's underway, I mean, they haven't built the arena yet. And so, you know, I think that's further away. Houston, I don't know where Houston's at. I mean, they certainly have a building there, so... Maybe they're a wild card to keep an eye on, but it just seems like there's a lot of momentum in Utah's favor right now. I think they'd like an expansion team, all things being equal, but let's see what happens with Arizona. In terms of when expansion will be, it seems like it's coming sooner than later. Like, all this talk, it emanates from a place. And I think that the league, you know, as I mentioned last episode, it's just going to be hard for them to pass up the expansion fees that they can charge for these next franchises. But without repeating myself too much, do it with caution, please.
Mm-hmm. That's going to do it for Ask. Caution. Yes, of course. That's going to do it for Ask CJ, and that's going to do it for the Monday edition of the CJ Show. I'll let you get back to your work, and I'm sure you're going to give Pierre a piece of your mind after that tweet. You'll see it for yourself. appreciate
I'll tell you what, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
We got a few. Yeah. We got a few team dinners ahead here. Team Athletic and TSN dinners. He's got to watch himself. He's owed a prank now of some sort. So you better keep his head on a swivel.
Please let us know for the Thursday show, and hopefully you don't have to buy any dinners when you guys play credit card roulette.
We've done that before.
I know you've done that before. I hope you don't think we're doing it here. Oh, okay.
I don't think all we're right. doing it here. We'll see.
All right. We'll be back on Thursday. Also, for all the nature sounds in the background, I thought those were a nice touch. I know we heard the bird chirping in the background. I like those sounds. Maybe some people might not like them as much, but I appreciate the nat sound of an on-location record. So thank
Ambient
you for that.
Ambient noise.
Absolutely. We're back on Thursday. Subscribe to the show, however, or wherever you listen to the show. And yeah, thanks so much for listening. Peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie @JKMcKenzie.